Hey Nasties, here's Beatrice. Now before you start listening to this episode, we just wanted to let you know one quick thing, and that is, the episode was already recorded in September, so don't be surprised that there are references in the beginning of the episode to things that happened in September, like two recommendations by Austrian newspapers and magazines for us, or a very, very lovely listener email. So don't be surprised about that. We decided to release the episode now because on the 17th of November, the Justice League film is coming out in the US, and we thought that's a good occasion to release an episode about female superheroes and Wonder Woman. And we hope that you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it. Now onto the show.
She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Welcome to The Persistence. This is the She Who Persisted podcast. My name is Beatrice, and I'm here today with
Bethany
and Elizabeth.
Hi.
And we're your hosts for today. Now, before we actually delve into today's topic, there are three things that I would like to say first. So, first of all, thank you to all of our amazing listeners. We haven't said that for a while. Thank you for listening to us, supporting us. We have listeners in every continent of the world and in so many different countries, and we really, really appreciate that.
That is awesome.
That it really is awesome, and we just wanted to say thank you. And also thank you for still being here, despite the fact that we have not been on a regular schedule for the past few months. But, you know, sometimes life happens. But now we're on it again, and there are a few exciting new things to come. So they're still secret. So let's just say new logo and merchandise. And so stay tuned. That's what I'm saying. Stay tuned. And then secondly, I would like to say thank you to the Austrian feminist magazine Anschläge, and also the Austrian newspaper, online newspaper, Die Standard.at, for recommending our podcast, because we actually got a few new listeners because of it. A few people found us via those media, and that's really awesome. So thank you very much for mentioning us. And if you speak German, check out those two, because they're both among my favorite media. Yeah, and then thirdly, I would like to say a very special thanks to a listener. I don't know if she's okay with using her name. I didn't ask her, so I won't, but I'm just going to call her B, who sent us a very, very lovely email that actually made me cry when I read it. So you know who you are. Thank you very much. All right. So what are we talking about today?
Female superheroes.
Yes.
And so we're talking about all of us, right?
Every woman and every person who identifies as a woman in this entire world, superhero.
That's who we're talking about.
I saw a t-shirt one time that was like, who else could bleed for 5 to 7 days and still live?
Exactly.
And I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about every single woman in this world. So I hope you have a lot of time. It's going to be a long episode.
Okay. Maybe not that extensive.
Also, by the way, I'm just telling the listeners, I'm drinking from my Wonder Woman mug today that you can't see.
Yes.
That you can't see, but I posted it on Instagram, so you can see it there.
That is an awesome mug. I've got mug jealousy now.
Thank you for Max. Thank you to Max, my friend, who got it for me
cool.
for my birthday. So thank you, Max. Cheers.
Love it.
Okay.
But yeah, that's good. We can talk about some of the female characters that inspire us, right? Because there's been this huge push in film and TV in particular towards having like better representation of this strong female character. And I should add characters that actually have some sort of dimension to them, not just pretty women in supporting roles that play the love interest. And I do want to say it's still pretty flawed, I think, but I think it's also really important to highlight some of the progress that we've made and things that we're still looking for. If you're a film producer and you're listening to this, which would be amazing.
Every film producer is listening to this.
Please start hiring more women and like have some awesome, awesome women, like Wonder Woman, for example, or We've just had the new Doctor has just been announced, and things like Supergirl, stuff like that. Like, give us women that we can emulate. That's what I want in my life.
Right. And Wonder Woman should be in every film. So all the,
oh God, yes.
All the hundreds of,
I don't care what it's about.
Yeah. Wonder Woman
should be in
yeah.
it.
And all the thousands of film producers that are listening to this are going to take that to heart. And now Wonder Woman is going to be in every film.
I hope.
Yeah.
I would go to the cinema substantially more well, often if that were the case.
Same. Wonder Woman seriously has been the only film ever in the history of my cinema going that I've seen twice. So.
Really?
So, wow.
Really.
That's high praise.
That's the truth. I swear to God.
The first film I ever saw multiple times in cinema was The Lion King. And my dad still hates that.
Okay, yeah.
Not The Lion King. He hates that he actually paid to take me more than once.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like 3 years old.
Yeah. There are several films that I watched several times, but not in cinema, so.
Well, what did you like about it?
What did I like about it? Everything.
I mean, besides everything. Like, what in particular drew you back to going to see it again?
Well, I think I'm going to talk about this later. I would like to just give, like, listen. I wanted to give like a plot summary first, and then if that's okay.
For anyone who's crazy enough that they haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God. Yeah. So
go for it.
Yeah. I'm just gonna, yeah. So this whole episode is named Waiting for Godot. And I would like to start this threefold discussion of like three different female characters that we'll talk about with Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. And I have to preface that by saying that I know nothing about superhero films or comics. Nothing is probably a bit of an exaggeration, but not a lot, because I never liked that genre in those films, because I always considered them to be like this masculinist, macho genre type of film.
Yeah, that's evident by the fact that, like, I'm thinking about the comic books and graphic novels that I have on my shelf right now, the most prominent of which are V for Vendetta. And Batman versus Alien. So,
yeah,
I would say, weird choices aside, it is something that I always really consider to be like a boy thing to do.
Exactly. Just as the whole, you know, broader context of science fiction is very often, you know, this type of boys with the toys kind of genre.
Yeah.
But we can also talk about
guns and.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Scantily clad women.
Oh, yeah. We also have them in Wonder Woman, though. But
I mean, but hey, yeah, I'm happy with that, but not as a sexual device, right? Like,
exactly.
If a woman's going to be scantily clad, it's because that's what she chooses to do, rather than some man putting her in that outfit kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, Patty Jenkins kind of changed my idea of superhero films and kind of showed us that it can be different. Because Patty Jenkins, by the way, is the director of Wonder Woman.
And a real-life superhero, I am convinced.
Exactly, yeah. Now, in case you have been living under a rock for the past few months and have not been keeping up with the news at all, which, to be fair, I don't blame you for.
I don't either, nope.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Let me just summarize in a few sentences what all this fuss is about, actually. So first thing you need to know is there is now a new superhero movie with a female superhero at its center, which is the new Wonder Woman movie.
Yes.
Second thing you need to know is that it's directed by a female, oh my God,
what?
Director called Patty Jenkins. And believe it or not, her vagina was not in the way. Because despite the fact that a woman made it, can you believe it? It was a huge success.
No, I can't.
You can't, okay. I know.
Is she a woman who's actually a man?
No, she's not actually. No, she's not in disguise. She's actually, And in fact, it's the highest grossing film directed by a woman, the biggest domestic opening for a film directed by a woman, the highest grossing superhero origin film in the US, the largest opening for a female-led comic book film. So, and to all the people who say that this podcast is not professional enough, I'm quoting from Wikipedia, so... Fuck you, haters. I'm a professional.
Well done.
Seriously. So, third thing you need to know, Wonder Woman is played by the amazing, and I'm very biased because I'm such a fan, Gal Gadot. And, yes. And the plot goes...
Interestingly enough, was in the Fast and Furious films.
Exactly.
Just a fun fact for everyone who
she was.
She didn't exist before this film.
She did not exist before this
role,
film.
obviously oh, okay. so much better. No, no, no. The fact that...
I thought you said she did not exist.
Oh, God, no. No, 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 no. I'm saying that I think a lot of people thought that this was like her debut into film.
Yeah,
which
no.
Which is absolutely not the case.
No.
But that being said, it was the first time that she played a lead character and she fucking nailed it.
Absolutely. So, and what Bethany just said is actually true. Gal Gadot did not exist before this movie. She was actually, in real life, also formed by Zeus and put onto this planet just to play Wonder Woman. That's an absolute true fact. So the plot goes like this, and I'm going to give you a very objective plot summary, of course, and as always. And I probably should also give you all the spoiler alerts in the world, but on the other hand, if you haven't seen the movie yet, then it's also your fucking fault, because seriously, I mean... Come on. Are you, like, what's wrong with you? So the whole story, the whole story is set in the fictional country or realm or kingdom, which is actually a queendom, to be fair, of Themyscira. And unfortunately, it's fictional because it's pretty fucking awesome. I want to live there always.
I'd go there in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I love Vienna,
vacation
but...
Vacation destination? Fuck that. Let's all just move.
Let's all just move
a
to
a world where men aren't needed. That sounds amazing.
Seriously. No President Trump ever.
Oh,
ever.
God. That's like heaven.
So, yeah. Listen, I love Vienna. I love living here. But Themyscira, I'd go there. Like, mm-hmm. nope. Yeah. So... The character that will turn into Wonder Woman later is called Diana, and she's the daughter of the Queen Hippolyta. I don't know, what, how do you pronounce it, actually? Hippolyta?
No, I was
Hippolyta,
was
I think it's pronounced
Hippolyta,
in the movie.
But I, who knows?
Well, who knows?
Someone knows.
She's played by, she's played by Connie Nielsen, so
complete
in badass. Other words, yeah, in other words, after Merida and Moana, we have another badass princess, so take that, princess haters. Even better, everyone who lives in Themyscira is a lady. So yeah. Themyscira is the realm of the Amazons. No man lived there. Thank fucking God.
Divine.
And absolutely. So yeah, what's not to love about this? Seriously. And in the beginning, Hippolyta tells the teeny tiny baby Diana about the history of the Amazons. And one thing she tells her about is... about the god of wars, the god of war, Ares, and that he basically wants to destroy humankind. So that's his goal in life. He's very ambitious. A very ambitious person. He has a goal in life. So when he attempted to kill all humans for the last time, he killed all gods who basically stood in his way, except Zeus. And Zeus forced the god of war to retreat. He hurt him really badly, and that forced him to retreat. And then he left the humans with a weapon called the God Killer so that they can defend themselves when Ares returns. And then Diana, from the very beginning, is a badass Wonder Woman, of course, because, yeah, she wants to be trained in fighting like all the other badass Amazon women. But her queen and her mom, the queen, her mom, is against that, and she initially forbids her sister, General Antiope, played by the amazing
yes.
Robin Wright. So she forbids her to train Diana. But then Antiope convinces Hippolyta that it's necessary for Diana to be able to defend herself, and so she allows her to be trained. But Hippolyta orders Antiope to train her harder than all the other Amazons. What we learn later in the film is that Diana is actually a demigoddess. And that's one of the reasons that's one of the reasons why she has all of their superpowers. And it's also one of the reasons why she is to be particularly protected. So one day, a plane crashes in Themyscira, and it's the plane of Steve Trevor, a pilot, a very mansplaining pilot, played by Chris Pine. However, there's a German ship following this pilot, and they kind of attack Themyscira, and the Amazons fight back. They kill all the Germans, but General Antiope sacrifices herself in order to protect Diana, and she dies. Dun, dun,
no.
dun. Yes, she does. And then they interrogate Steve. They find out that there's a massive war going on, which is kind of supposed to be World War I. And then Diana assumes that the god Ares is behind all of that, like the war and all of the fighting and all the people killing each other. And then against her mother's will, she decides to travel to the realm of the humans to end the war. And then there's also a love story between Steve and Diana. Plus, in the end, she actually kills Eras and Steve dies. The end. Basically.
That was a whirlwind explanation.
Thank you.
And might I add that I do not like Steve Trevor.
No, me neither. I also
love Chris Pine, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And Chris Pine, as far as I know, is a feminist. I think he had an interview out about this, actually. That being said, I did not like his character.
Me neither.
At all.
I should also add...
I felt like all of the male characters were there. I mean, I felt like the male characters were like stereotypes whatever cultures they were supposed to be representing. And like, kind of in a cheap way. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't like the fact that you had this really strong female character. And yeah, it's not like Steve, you know, pushes her into her role. She chooses it. And she kind of realizes that there are all of these other mildly dynamic men who make sacrifices and things like that. And that helps her grow and develop. But the love story and the romance between them was completely unnecessary, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I should add that, of course, a lot of other things happen too until Steve dies and the end. But, like the whole film was really celebrated by many feminists worldwide. And I really also loved it. And I love that it's such a female-centric movie. I love that it's directed by women. I love that it's starring very strong women and female characters that are also celebrated for her strength, both physical strength and strength of character. So it's not just about the physique and the appearance. But of course, there were also critical things to be said about the film. But like my background for that is that I really love the film. But also one thing that I also kind of took issue with is the whole love story. So it's still like the character of Steve that kind of furthers the plot in a sense, so that she's coming with him. And then, of course, like there are other motives behind that, but it's still, you know, the love story that kind of furthers the plot when you think about the very end when Steve dies, and it's just the pain of losing him that kind of gives her the strength to fight Eras. And
yeah,
I don't know if I like that. It also, of course, can be read like in a feminist sense that, you know, but
like, why wouldn't she have thought about her, like her aunt, Antiope? Like, why wouldn't that have been the image that she had? Because she saw her aunt, like, who had trained her, who had encouraged her to become a warrior. Like, why wouldn't that have been her image? Why did it have to be Steve?
Yeah.
Her aunt, who she's been with all her life, you know? Like,
yeah. I think I kind of chose to interpret that a little bit differently. I think the pain of losing him is kind of that thing that gives her that push. But there was one part right before she kind of goes like full Amazonian warrior on everyone, where she looks over and she sees the couple of their men that have gone with them into this battle. Mm-hmm. And they're like stuck in the fighting behind some barrels. Like, they're very obviously going to die because they're outnumbered and all this other stuff. And she just sees how supportive they are of each other.
Yeah.
And that's when she turns around. And like, I think it's right after that that she kind of pictures Steve and his sacrifice and stuff like that. But that moment for me, that would have been great for me because, right, it's about humanity coming together against the odds, as opposed to, oh God, this man that I loved is gone. And I would have been totally fine if the whole love story had been cut and it would have just focused on this band of men that you wouldn't have thought to come together, coming together.
Sure. I also think, though, that, like, they could have, I mean, instead of focusing on the love story there, they could have, like, flashed to the battle scene of the Amazons and shown, like, the comparison of, like, these men coming together, just like the women came together. I mean, the whole movie didn't have to be about her, like, oh, this world of men is so strange and odd in comparison to my land of ladies. Like,
But, you know, I mean, this is the only thing about the movie that really annoyed me, to be fair, the whole love story. I just found so unnecessary. And then the end, it was like, thank fucking God he died, because it would have been the worst thing if they would have actually ended up together and she'd be like, I mean, I think at least the love story is over in the end. You know what I mean? Like, at least it ends.
Yeah. It made me really frustrated, though, you know, when they've got, like, the picture of everyone that died in the war and the sacrifice that they gave. And she goes up and she looks at his picture. And there was a really big part of me that was like, oh, God, I hope they don't find some way to resurrect him.
Oh, fuck, yes. Oh,
like,
my God.
Just let it die. Let it be over. Let it be gone. Yeah,
let it be gone. We don't
really
want it.
We don't want him back.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, I have to say, I liked the way that they had tied her into the Batman versus Superman movie as, like,
both of you.
Screw both of you. And then, but now it's like Bruce Wayne is stalking her, like, sending her weird packages and photos and stuff. Like, come on, Bruce Wayne, get over it. Like,
yeah, get over it. Really. I mean, to be fair, the whole love story element, of course, is also a Hollywood convention. And to me, it also kind of felt like, okay, it's kind of a box that we need to tick. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Gross.
Well, and you have this whole idea, right, that, sure, it's great to put out a film that women would actually maybe enjoy. But I think you're right that there's also this idea that, like, even a film, or especially a film that has a strong female character, has to appeal to men in some regard. Yeah. And it's really fucking sad and unfortunate that the way that that needs to come about is like, oh, well, we need to make her a sexual object somehow and have this love story. There has to be this macho man that helps her through the way of the men's world. You know?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing about it is that it's not just that she's a sexual object. It's also that because she is open with her sexuality and doesn't like, she is a completely sexually available woman because she doesn't understand the world of man. And so the moral outrage that, like, a woman would, you know, be showing her legs in, you know, 1917, 1919, like, Germany or France and England would be, like, unheard of. Like, oh, goodness, you have to put some clothes on, lady. I can't possibly sleep with you. Like, that's not to be done. Like, but she's totally open for it and available. And that was also a little problematic for me, too, because we didn't have to make her this, like, sexually adventurous, sexually open woman. Now, there's nothing wrong with being sexually open, but it didn't have to be like that.
I mean, I actually disagree with that, Elizabeth, because to me, it felt a bit more like she was actually much more sexually liberated than the women of the world of the humans, in a sense. And so she was not confined by their kind of conventions, you know. And if you think about the whole scene where she has to choose something new to wear, and then, like, Steve, I just wanted to say Steve Jobs, not Steve Jobs. Steve and his secretary want to choose something for her, but they want to find something that's not as, you know, revealing, where we can kind of read them as kind of instances in this world where female bodies are very much controlled, in a sense, and she comes from a world in which female bodies are not controlled. And, you know, the fact that she's not wearing any pants makes sense because she needs to fight, and you can't really do that very well with jeans. I mean, so, I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Can't do those high kicks.
Sure, but it's also, but that scene is also following these, like, Hollywood tropes of the pretty woman thing.
That's
like,
true.
We're going to make you look all fancy you fit in. Don't you worry.
Yeah, but then again, the scene also kind of shows that she's not very much interested in that. But her goal is that her clothes are supposed to be practical, and that she's going to be able to fight in them. And she also says, I think, how is a woman supposed to fight in these clothes? You know, like, she's,
and yet she still undergoes this transformation, and society still ends up controlling her.
I mean, in a sense, yes, yeah. But it's also necessary to fulfill her goal, because she would be far too visible as an Amazon if she wouldn't wear clothes that would kind of hide her, in a sense, in, like, every sense of the world, hide her. So, and then there's one more thing that I would like to say, because Bethany, you said that they kind of need to include things that men like. I think it's like, I think the romance is more about what they think that women want to see, about the cliche that they think that women want to see in a movie. And it actually kind of reminds me of a lot of because I'm writing my PhD thesis about Disney films, and it actually reminds me of a lot of Disney films of the 90s where we have that strong female princesses, like the strong female characters, those princesses who are kick-ass, who are like really strong-willed and smart and everything. And then we always have that love story interwoven nonetheless, because I think there's just this idea that that's what's supposed to happen in, and that's what's what people, girls, women want to see.
It's also a matter of allowing men to not feel so threatened.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
If there's a woman in it and she is attracted to a man, then the man doesn't have to worry because ultimately he can control her.
Oh, absolutely.
Through his, like,
that's a very good point.
Male hormones or whatever men think that they can control women by.
Yeah.
It's like we don't want men to feel left out, so we have to give her a love interest so that we know that like men are included too.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mean that when men like kind of identify with Steve, as like viewers of the film, they don't feel as threatened by her because she's also interested in them in a sense.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that she's an Amazonian warrior, and I think if she was allowed to have her full power without being a love interest, then you are starting to threaten that idea of, you know, that very toxic idea of masculinity, where you have a woman who's stepping into a role that is traditionally male dominated and men can't handle it because suddenly what's their purpose if not to be the protector?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the funny thing about this film is that he tries to be her protector, but then finds out that he's completely useless. That he cannot protect her, but she protects him, actually. And I think there's one scene where... Yeah, the one scene where he wants to kind of keep her from going into the battlefield, and she does nonetheless, and she doesn't listen to him, and she just does it. And then there's some point later on where he actually says to the others that they don't need to worry about her because she's going to take care of herself. So it's kind of turned on his head, I think, that cliche in a sense. One thing that I also noticed about the film, and I don't know what you think about this, but, you know, I have to... Again, I was reminded of a Disney film, mainly of the Disney film Maleficent, because in Maleficent we have this world of... the world of the fairies that is, like, exclusively female, portrayed as this kind of peaceful matriarchy. And then we have the world of humans that is actually portrayed as this very, like, martialistic kind of macho man world. There are no women depicted, not really, just one woman that is supposed to be mother, and that's it. So and we have a very similar kind of dynamic in that film with you know, the on the one hand the world of the Amazons, and then on the other hand the world of humans that is really a world of war and a world of men and a world of like fighting. And, you know, what did you make of this? Like, that is it also kind of a critique of kind of our world, that it's portrayed as such a patriarchal and at the same time kind of martialistic world? So that's one question.
It seems to me that the patriarchal society seems to be just inundated with chaos. That, you know, in both the circumstances that you talk about, there seems to be kind of this peaceful harmony in a society without men, because there's order. And I think there's a lot of criticism that, like, oh, a world without men would just be so emotional that nothing would get done and you'd all sink up on your periods and cry over chocolate. Which, like, okay, fine. I'm fine with that life. As long as the chocolate is endless, sign me up. But I don't think that people necessarily realize, or that we've been taught to think, that an all-female society or a female-dominated society would fall into ruin because we don't have the order that's found in a patriarchal society. And in both of those instances that you're talking about, you have societies that are male-dominated and are male-centric, and yet they're embroiled in war and battles and all of these other things. And I think that's quite an interesting social commentary.
Well, I think it's also interesting that the Amazons are a warrior people, and yet they are a warrior people that is explicitly trying to stay out of wars.
Yeah. And make peace, basically.
And I think that's the interesting, right, is because they're protectors. And so battling comes at the worst possible, as a worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
But they're still prepared.
Yeah.
In the human world, it's like, oh, if we can battle, we should. we need to get more power. And the Amazonians are quite happy with their island.
Yeah. So, and I think the Amazonians, for them, battling and fighting is a means to achieve peace. And for the humans, the men, actually, that are portrayed, battling is a mean in and of itself. And is also a way to get more power, more land, and all that. So there's different motives involved in the fighting, I think. But then what I also find interesting is that, you know, the world of order is the peaceful one, and the world, like the patriarchal men world, is kind of the one that is not only in chaos, but in which, like, or let's put it that way, like power kind of is only achieved with kind of fighting and violence. And that's kind of the way that power is sustained, or is being tried to be sustained. That was not an English sentence, but you know what I mean.
No, but I think you're right. And it's very interesting that there's this idea that, and I always thought this was interesting, thinking about how the US, for example, can be very religiously dominated. And yet, when you talk about the seven deadly sins, one of them is greed. And so greed for power is so dominating. And this idea that if we're actually going to subscribe to religious ideals, for example, then we need to give up the need for power and greed and things like that. And yet that's completely kind of turned on its head, because no one actually is willing to give up power. And in fact, modern society is kind of all about gaining more power and is all about greed for wealth and power and privilege and things like that. Whereas when you look at the Amazonians, they're very much like, this is what we have and it sustains us. And that's great. That's all we need. Not to say they don't have fun, but that they don't feel a need to dominate other societies and cultures and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. What is also interesting, I think, is when Diana, Wonder Woman, kind of enters the world of humans, which is, as I said, portrayed as a world of men and a world of war, she kind of does not, and that struck me because, like, in the world of Amazons, she's surrounded by women all the time, and then all of a sudden, in the world of humans, she does not have any kind of female comrades, no female friends, no females at her side, but, like, she has those, that group of men that fight with her. And so on the one hand, I think that the whole thing about not having a close friend is kind of a superhero kind of convention, because we have this lone hero that fights. But then that she has other fighters at her side, and they're all men. So I would like to know what you think about this, because I would have loved to see more women at her side, and even friends. I don't know.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think that an argument can be made that we're looking at the film and the time period that it would have taken place in, then yeah, you wouldn't have had other female fighters and things like that. They just wouldn't have, women weren't necessarily allowed to fight. However, women were allowed to be nurses and things like that. And even if you're going to play into those traditional gendered stereotypes, it would have been great to see, oh, look, a couple of nurses from the hospital who take up arms and fight alongside her because they can break out of their prescribed gender roles, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how feminist it really is to just have one woman kind of break those gender stereotypes as kind of an individual. It's a very, like, this very individualistic idea of feminism, I think. And on the other hand, we could have, like, a feminism that's more about solidarity and kind of cooperation and all of that. And I just, as I said, I love the film, but I wish I would have seen more of that, not just like the lone hero kind of trope. Because, you know, I mean, they could have given her gal pals.
Yeah, and I feel that going the extra mile wouldn't have necessarily quashed how well the film did. That they probably could have taken some more risks and still performed quite well.
Yeah, if you think about Maleficent again, which is the film that it reminded me of in a sense, then we have women fighting with each other at the end, fighting the patriarchal ruler in the end. So it is possible. It is possible.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that Steve Trevor's secretary, Etta, in the comics themselves, she's actually basically Wonder Woman Diana's kind of sidekick. So they do have a, you know, very kind of mutual relationship in the comics that it came across a little bit in the film, but it wasn't, you know, she was definitely like Steve's secretary and that was it.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, we could also say that, you know, the fact that she is only surrounded by men who fight with her in the film, that kind of also exposes the sexist generals in our world, because the film does show groups of women who fight together in the world of the Amazons, but that's just not possible in our world, you know. So it could also be read as a critique, I guess, because the film tells us that women are in fact capable of all of that, but it's just not the roles that they are put in the world of the humans.
Yeah, we also have the only other woman that's kind of in the film is the villain, who has been had her beauty destroyed by, you know, chemicals that are being used to fight these male wars. So,
oh,
you know,
God,
she's,
yeah.
We used to be a beautiful woman, but now she's kind of disfigured, which, what does that tell us about this Dr. Poison?
Yeah.
You know, she's a Spanish chief chemist, so she's an entirely other kind of culture as well. But then she's also kind of destroyed by the things that she's creating in order to further these wars in this kind of patriarchal society.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also think that one of the reasons why the generals and commanders and stuff come to her is because she's been disfigured, whatever, that she doesn't present as a classic beauty, and therefore she's seen as not even in the realm of a potential love interest, nor do they find her, you know, because she's not beautiful, she therefore can't fill that role, and so she's even further outcast because no one's going to find her interesting other than for the fact that she provides them with killing machines, you know?
Yeah. I had very mixed feelings about that villain character, because on the one hand, of course, she's brilliant. You know, she's kind of portrayed as a brilliant scientist, which is very unusual for a woman to be portrayed as in any film. So I kind of like that she's evil and brilliant. We don't get that often. But then the thing that I had a problem with is that it's, of course, the evil character that is quote unquote ugly or disfigured.
Yeah.
And that
that's
we have
pretty
like
common.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I know it's common, but I still don't like it.
Oh no, I'm not saying that it's good. I mean it's really common
I know.
To see especially female characters. I mean, if you look at even with Disney films, they show
Of course.
Women either getting old or having skin conditions. Mm-hmm. There was a great article, like academic journal article but I think it was like the Journal of Dermatology, that looked at skin conditions in evil characters in films, both men and women. And they show that it leads to societal stigmas about people who have skin conditions. So this is why dermatologists care about it, because if you have a rash, like people automatically think, oh, there's something wrong with that person. Not just like physically wrong, but they're a bad person.
And there's various ways in which like villains are portrayed as other. I think very often it's like racial othering. Very often it's like portrayal of like gender transgression. So it's very often like effeminate men that are portrayed as evil, or very masculine women that are portrayed as evil. So I think it's, as you said, it is a convention, but then there's also something positive about that villain in that she's a brilliant woman. I think so.
Amazons are often depicted as being kind of, if not evil, at least certainly other in literature and film and drama in the past. And what I think is really interesting about this is that even though the Amazons are other here, we still get a sense that they are not necessarily the big like evil other. They're just a totally misunderstood. We don't understand. We don't get what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just one last thing that came to my mind. Oh no, actually two things. So the one thing is, what do you think about the portrayal of people of color in the film?
Terrible.
Because we also have really
what people
of
color.
I think that they exactly. I think they did a terrible job portraying people of color in this
really?
Film.
Okay, why?
Diana's maid is a black woman. Like, really? You couldn't have had black women being warriors. You also had to have her maid, the person who takes care of her, be a black woman. The men, their racial stereotypes of like a Scottish dude, an Arabic Moroccan, I think he was, complete with guy liner, and the like soft-spoken
Native American.
I mean, it was just like racial stereotype after racial stereotype.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, fine, it's taking place during World War One or whatever, but that doesn't mean that you can't have dynamic casting.
Right.
Because it's a film, you know, and I think with films you that aren't portraying a realistic event, you can take more liberties with casting choices and things like that.
Exactly. And the film does break stereotypes on the front of, you know, portraying women as fighters and portraying women as scientists and portraying women as scientific, also kind of authorities. So that's also not, you know, that was also not the case in during the First World War, I suppose. So, yeah. So they could have done that too with people of color.
Yeah. And I think the thing about feminism, right, is that oftentimes, especially white feminists, are very, very heavily criticized for the fact that we just tend to lack intersectionality.
Yes.
And that's something that is so incredibly important. And in a film that may be trying to push some of these societal boundaries, I would think that we would try to have a more conscious effort to be intersectional in that.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I think should also be discussed in that context is that Gal Gadot is an Israeli actress. This is why I was at first surprised when you said you didn't like the portrayal of people of color, because she's kind of a main character, right? So
yeah, but I think that probably when you think about how she herself is perceived by people of color, I wouldn't necessarily say that that was all that groundbreaking. I mean, yes, absolutely love that we didn't just cast, for example, Scandinavian woman with creamy white skin, you know? Yeah. But at the same time, I think my issue is not necessarily with Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, but more the other people that surrounded her. I mean,
Okay, yeah, I get that.
Much more could have been done with that.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of discussion online about her and her background, from super kind of neo-Nazi-ish, she's not white, to saying she's not white because she's from an oppressed group that, you know, her maternal grandparents survived the Holocaust, and this is really groundbreaking.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. As an Austrian, I kind of looked at it that way. I think that it's kind of groundbreaking to have a person that has, like, Jewish parents, that is from Israel, to be in such a massive role, you know.
Absolutely. So. But at the same time, you know, in these same discussions, the conversation was, well, she's not the same type of woman of color as a black woman is a woman of color. And the issue of kind of passing for white, for lack of a better turn of phrase. I'm white. I don't think that she, you know, I'm not trying to say that she is gaining privilege for passing for white, and there's like lots of air quotes around all of this. But at the same time, there is a perception, and I think Bethany, you're right, that if she gets the privilege of seeming to be a white woman, and if she gains that kind of white privilege that a woman with a darker skin tone may not have had, then the question is like, how much privilege does she have because of that, I guess.
I think my point was just that I think the American perspective is a bit of a different one than my European Austrian perspective, because like the culture where I come from, when we talk about like racism and racial stereotyping, I think like the biggest thing that happened here was the Holocaust. So anti-Semitism, I think, is a much huger topic here than it is in the US. I think in the US you have like this whole background of slavery and of like,
oh, we have anti-Semitism too.
I know. That's not what I'm saying. I know. I definitely know that. But I mean, you did not have you don't have the history of the Holocaust as like,
no.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So in this, it happened here. Like it happened in this country. Sure. It happened like in Europe. And so I think I don't know, maybe that's complete bullshit, but I feel like anti-Semitism is a much not a much bigger problem probably, but like, when we talk about race, it's like one of the first things I think about. And I think,
well, and some of that comes to your education too. I mean, you're probably taught about it in elementary school
exactly.
You know, up through into college and stuff about the Holocaust. We're taught about that too. It's just that it didn't happen in our country.
Right. We have
a long history of oppressing people in other ways.
Exactly, you have a whole history of slavery and all of that. So, and you know, when I walk through Vienna, I have like those what we call Stolpersteine, which is like those small like golden stones that are like in the streets everywhere where kind of Jewish people have been deported. So I'm like constantly aware of the fact that of anti-Semitism and what happened as a result of that. So maybe I have a So my whole point was maybe I have a different perspective because I'm not American,
Absolutely.
but like a European, and
Yeah, but I will say I'm not at all contesting her casting her being cast as Wonder
No.
Woman because solely on the basis of acting skill, she's incredible.
Oh my
And
God.
to be completely
Yeah.
honest, I don't care about the color of someone's skin in a casting
No.
decision. I'm just thinking that as we move forward in having more, you know, quote, progressive films, it would be nice to see representation of more women of color as main
Oh,
protagonists who aren't
absolutely. Yeah.
just sexualized. Because I think there is this huge both sexualization and demonization of, for example, black women. And it would be,
And
yeah.
marginalized, like Leslie. Oh God, I can't remember anybody's name.
Leslie Jones.
Thank you. From
Yeah.
Ghostbusters. I mean, it was like
Yeah.
a stereotype of what a woman from the inner city New York or wherever, whatever city it was set in, would be like. And it was like, okay, well, I mean, she's funny and it was great, but maybe we can have more development of the character that's not simply a
Yeah, characters with
stereotype.
dimension.
Yeah.
And I think the thing with Ghostbusters was that it was done by women who are in SNL very frequently. And so a lot of Ghostbusters was just really, really hyping up all of the stereotypes that women go through
Yes.
and, you know, taking someone like Chris Hemsworth and making him a sex icon, you know.
Yes.
And so I think that,
I mean, I kind of like that part.
yeah, but I think that's the thing, right? Is that it was like, oh, well, this is what men do to women all the time. Why can't we do it to a man, you know? And I think a lot of the stereotypes that Leslie was portraying of being like the kind of silly black woman sidekick type character who's not really accepted was something that was very intentionally done. But I agree that we need more dimension to our women of color. Well, even any in general people of color in all of our across all the forms of media.
Yeah, I agree.
And the fact that, you know, we've got all of these different strong female characters in mainstream media, they're all white, you know? I mean, when you think off the top of your head, all of the main action heroes and superheroes that are currently on screen, I couldn't for the life of me name a single prominent woman of color.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm sure that somewhere there is, and it's just because of the stuff that I watch that I haven't seen someone like that. But I think that's a really, really big statement that we're making some strides with having developed female characters, but they're developed white female characters.
And again, like this is probably because of my background, but this is one of the reasons why I found Wonder Woman so groundbreaking, because I kind of read her as she's a Jewish woman and she's kind of a superhero. So
Yeah.
yeah,
And
I
like
don't
I
know.
said,
I don't
it's a
know.
step. No, I agree with you, but it's, you know, it's a step towards something bigger. And I'm excited to see, does having a Jewish woman as, you know, a main female protagonist actually take us further in the next film we have, you know?
Yeah, it's a good
Yeah.
question.
Okay, yeah, I think we talked a lot about Wonder Woman. There are two more things that we want to talk about today. And Liz.
Yeah, so let's talk more about another white female superhero,
Yes,
and that is
please.
Supergirl. So there have been a lot of different incarnations of Supergirl, but the most recent is Supergirl TV show, which is currently on the CW, but which started out as a show on CBS, and after getting canceled, actually got picked up by CW and integrated into their already very successful Arrowverse, which includes Arrow or Green Arrow and The Flash. And they're actually adding on to that as well. So it tells the story of an alien from Krypton named Kara, who is sent to Earth to protect her cousin, Kal-El, aka Clark Kent, when their planet's on the verge of destruction. she spends her life trying to be normal. She ends up showing up much later, Kara does, if you don't know the story. Like, her pod that she got sent off on kind of got waylaid, and then she ended up coming back to Earth. And when she finally got to Earth, like, Superman was already a thing, and she was like, I don't know what to do. I'm, like, an 8-year-old, and I'm supposed to take care of this dude who's already, like, a fully grown adult and helping people. So, but this picks up with her as kind of like a, you know, millennial working at, like, an internship at a thing that's similar to the Daily Planet, just like Clark Kent did, but in this case, it's Catco, which is like this media conglomerate. She's kind of awkward, trying to really, she knows that she has these powers, obviously. She was given to this family that kind of helped protect her. And she's basically the assistant to Cat Grant, who is played by Calista Flockhart, and she's a, like, a multimedia powerhouse. She calls herself, like, the most important woman in media. Anyway, she has to kind of reveal herself because her sister almost gets in a plane crash, and so she saves her sister and then has to, you know, maintain these two identities, the, like, Supergirl identity and her mild-mannered, what ends up being a reporter by the second season, identity, just like Clark Kent. So there's some things that Supergirl really does right. The two most powerful people in National City, the city that they're in, are women. Cat Grant, the founder of Catco, uses her position to promote feminist causes. She brands Supergirl and serves as her, like, champion in the media. She provides Kara with really sage advice for how to succeed as a woman in a male-dominated world. She often talks about how, well, when I used to work over at the Daily Planet, and so she's clearly, like, moved on from that. There are a couple places, and I'll talk about this more later, where she talks about how she, like, loves her some Clark Kent, and, like, every time he comes over, she's, like, lusting after him, which is kind of creepy because I get this sense that she's, like, way older, but, I mean, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. But at least it's, like, a woman who has sexual agency, right?
Yeah, sexual agency. And, you know, I don't care if there's, like, an older man, like, going after a younger dude. Like, what does that matter? I don't care. Mm-hmm. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
But the dynamic between them is really great, which is why I was a bit disappointed in the second season when Cat Grant, like, basically was written out of the show because filming was moved out of L.A. and Calista Flockhart kind of, like, stepped back. Because then what you have is Jimmy Olsen, who takes over as the head of Catco, which is great. I mean, it's an African-American male character who's running this thing. But he disappears for huge sections of the show. You know, his authority is constantly called into question, which I also find really problematic because it's called into question by a reporter who's supposed to be reporting to him, this, like, older white dude. So, anyway. I also like that the women aren't just, like, positive characters. There are some female villains. There's some complexity and ambiguity to the message. It's not just that, like, women are good, men are bad, and women are, like, ambiguously, like, good sometimes. Women aren't helpless victim, and this may go without saying, but Supergirl isn't the only woman who can kick ass. There are lots of women on the show who can hold their own and rely on themselves or a kid female superheroine to save them. Women are hardly ever just sitting around waiting for someone to show up to save them. And they're often saving a man from mortal peril. So Supergirl has a sister, like, not actually even half-sister, like adopted, because Supergirl was adopted. So, but her sister, she works at a government agency. She carries a gun. She kind of looks a little bit like a government secret agent version of Lara Croft, but with shorter hair. Because she's got, like, the gun strapped to her legs and whatever.
Okay.
And then in the second season, Alex gets a girlfriend who is a police officer. She's very strong. She is from, like, a small town and had to come out. So her whole coming out story of being a person of color and coming out also plays in. And I think that that was pretty well done. And they don't seem to kill off strong female characters either. And they I don't think that they're going to kill off the lesbian couple either. So I think that is pretty...
That is a strong bonus.
Right?
Yeah. Not killing women is a bonus.
Right. Kind of, yeah. And then the idea that girl in this story is not just a diminutive for woman, and it's not a dirty word. For better or worse, there's often a strain of feminism that's been attempting to reclaim the word girl. Think about how often it's used as negative. Like, you hit like a girl, you run like a girl, as a way of, like, putting boys down. girl in this.
If somebody says you hit like a girl and you run like a girl, all you have to say is, yes, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, exactly. I hope you can catch up.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But the show tries to kind of reclaim girl as something really positive. And so when Cat Grant kind of coins the term Supergirl, she really makes explicit that, like, there's nothing wrong with being a girl. I'm a girl. I'm a woman, but I grew up as a girl. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I can understand what you mean, though, that it's only slightly problematic in the sense that when we talk about why the word girl is so hard to get rid of as a derogatory term, a lot of it boils down to, as much as there is a male equivalent of girl, it's never used in the same context. So you say, like, oh, can you get the attention of that girl over there? And it's like, okay, well, she's a woman. But you'd never say, like, oh, can you get that boy's attention? It's like, oh, can you get that man's attention? Or can you get that guy's attention? That somehow...
Dude, a guy, or something like that. Yeah,
somehow men are always in this position of power as they get older, whereas women are always, always under the constraints of being girls.
Absolutely. You know. I went to a women's college. Women's colleges are often referred to as girls' school. It's not a girls' school. It's a women's college.
Yeah.
Get it right.
Yeah.
So there are some problematic things, right? As with everything, as academics, that we aren't sure that we want to say it's bad, we say problematic. So even though the main characters are strong women, they're often defined by their relationships with men. So for a good part of season one, Kara is in love with James Olsen, and James leaves his long-term girlfriend to start a relationship. And James's girlfriend, who he leaves, is in the military, she's a lawyer, she's amazing, and why would you want to leave her? Well, because why not have a relationship with Supergirl? Yeah. I mean, so in the end, they end up together, but then she decides that she doesn't want to have a relationship with him. And instead, in season two, she spends most of the season struggling with the relationship with the Daxamite, who apparently are the enemies of the Kryptonians. I did not know this. And so, like, she saves the day, and her boyfriend, though he's not as powerful as her, like, he saves the day with her, and then the focus in the whole second season is on their relationship with Mon-El, this, like, Daxamite dude, instead of necessarily on her and her development. I mean, yes, it's on her development of, like, emotions and a relationship, and she can have a relationship with him because she's not afraid of hurting him because he's the same strength as her. But, you know, it's frustrating for me, again, like Wonder Woman, why do we have to have constantly, like, women being defined by their relationship with men.
Yeah, exactly.
I also could have done without the introduction of Superman in season two. We're told that Supergirl's actually faster than Superman, and the fact that he comes to kind of save the day made me so angry in season two that I wanted to throw something at the screen. Because he's also this self-righteous dick, and I was like, just shut up. This is not fucking Superman. This is Supergirl. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in seeing you on the screen. Just shut your mouth.
Do you think that they did that because they thought it might improve ratings to have the character of Superman, who's so, you know, quote, well-known and, you know, whatever, like, coming in, oh, if we introduce a character that's already really well-established, maybe we can get more viewers, as opposed to it actually making sense in the plot? I don't know. What do you think?
You know, he was in the first season because they didn't have the rights to Superman to include him, like him as a character.
Okay, so maybe he would have been included from the start if they had that.
I think some of it has to do with plot, but some of it is also, I think, you know, people want to see Superman because it's Superman. Yeah.
And anything that says super in the title surely has to have Superman in it somewhere.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, so Superman, I felt like he was superfluous and I could have done without him.
Yeah.
There are a lot of women who are introduced explicitly to be pitted against Supergirl and to show how women are not to be. Hmm. So Supergirl is like the image of perfection. She's moral, she's kind, she does good. And whether they're active villains in the show or simply foils for Kara, Supergirl, there are some female characters who are simply there to show women how not to be. Yeah. This means don't be too sexual. Don't be too ambitious if it doesn't serve an explicit feminist end. So Mon-El's mother and Lena Luthor's mother and Kara's aunt, they're all trying to gain power, mm. not either trying mm. to promote, you know, equality or some positive thing. Yeah. And by the way, don't get me started about the fact that most of the older women on the show are evil.
Yay, ageism. Mm.
So again, a very classical kind of representation of femininity as kind of this dichotomous good versus evil kind of yeah. thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We even have, there's this one nice thing that they have Linda Carter, who was the original TV Wonder Woman. They have her as, I want to say the president. And yeah. she's actually an alien who kind of can shapeshift into human form. So that's kind of fun. But she's yeah. positive. She's a good character. But she's also an alien. So.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to say, like, isn't it kind of typical to have an alien be... To like the progressive female character, to have that be an alien and not an actual human woman.
Well, sure.
Which kind of brings us to a third.
Oh, yes, because we'd never be able to yeah. achieve that in realistic society.
Kind of introduces Beth's part yeah. already.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So the last thing that I'll say that I find a little problematic, and we talked about this with Wonder Woman too, is that it goes along with this white feminist, white women are going to save all women. And though we can make the argument that Supergirl is really trying to show that it's being inclusive, using aliens as replacements for people of color, which could potentially be offensive, mm-hmm. never mind the fact that, like, most of these aliens look like they're being played by white actors. Like, so, yeah. you know, the othering is no longer people of color.
Yeah.
It is aliens. And we're getting all of our, mm-hmm. like, lessons about mm-hmm. aliens, but why can't we just talk about people of color and the fact that maybe on Earth, whatever, they're on a different Earth. So maybe on that Earth, there is no, like, racism anymore. Whatever.
As if.
So there's been a lot of criticism of what's called, like, white feminism, looking at, like, Taylor Swift and the girl power movement. Mm. And I'd say that Supergirl is a start. It's not enough. We can't just pat ourselves on the back for supporting women. And we could be more inclusive. The one... you know, woman of color in the show is the lesbian partner of Kara's sister. She's really great. And I'm glad that they included that character. But to kind of use aliens as a replacement in terms of cultural critique for people of color, I think is, again, using academic speak, problematic.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think I was really excited to hear that as I'm a massive Doctor Who fan, I was really excited to hear that the 13th Doctor is going to be a woman. And I'll get back to that in a second. But I'm also really upset because it kind of goes back to the erasure of people of color, because this past season of Doctor Who, which I think was one of the best and you know, most well-written of the 12th Doctor's run, saw a new companion who was a black lesbian. And it was this idea that, like, oh, finally, we have a really great, dynamic female who's not just white and swooning over the Doctor. And that was really cool. But with Capaldi leaving as the 12th Doctor, we get a new Doctor and a new companion.
Yeah.
And so we're now losing that. And I'm really sad because I think that the character they had, Bill, was really good, and I would have loved to see her do more. So I imagine that by now almost everyone has kind of heard the news, but we got this announcement from BBC that Jodie Whittaker, who was, I don't know if you guys watch Broadchurch at all, but she was in that, and she's absolutely amazing. But so it just was you watch it for David Tennant, don't you?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was announced that she's going to be taking over as the 13th Doctor. And Jesus Christ, I have never heard more whiny white men on the internet in my life. I was thinking today about when Peter Capaldi was announced as the Doctor and how people are like, oh, he's so old, he's not attractive, like, this isn't Doctor Who. Forgetting, of course, that the fourth Doctor, Peter Davison, was, of course, the youngest Doctor prior to the new series. And in fact, actually, I think, with the exception of Matt Smith, he was the youngest Doctor. Because he was 29 when he debuted as the Doctor. And then you had Paul McGann, who was 36. And then Tom Baker was 40. But the original Doctor Who was, of course, the iconic William Hartnell, and he was 55. And let me tell you, he didn't look 55. He looked like 90. So to then say, oh, God, I know, I'm going to get so much backlash for that, right? But Peter Capaldi, so yeah, William Hartnell was 55. Peter Capaldi, also 55. And that's why I kind of was so excited at the casting of Capaldi, because not only is he a really fucking talented actor, but it also kind of harkened back to this older, wiser Doctor Who. And it was a role that we unfortunately didn't really get to see with Capaldi until the end of his run, really, just in this last year. And I kind of chalk that up to poor writing and kind of this awkward need for sexual tension between the Doctor and the Companion that kind of started with Christopher Eccleston and just continued, and no one thought, like, hey, maybe we should stop that now because it's kind of getting in the way of our writing. But you have this really awful chemistry between Capaldi and Jenna Louise Coleman. So the writers kind of had this, like, ongoing tension throughout the run of the new series, starting with Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper, and that kind of continued even more strongly than when Eccleston left and was replaced with David Tennant. And all the fangirls were like, ah, yes, this is what we wanted. And you kind of saw this relationship between the Doctor and Rose, and everyone had their feelings just ripped out of them. And that kind of even continued then when you got Matt Smith. And it was really sad for me because I saw that as the Doctor kind of chronologically got older within the series, the casting had gotten younger and the character kind of became more silly and quirky and reckless. I didn't see as much magic as there was in some of the original episodes. And I think probably the best Doctor-Companion relationship that we got to see was the one between David Tennant and Catherine Tate, because you suddenly had this, like, kick-ass, sassy woman who didn't put up with any of the Doctor's shit. And Dr. Donoghue is this, like, compassionate badass. And there was zero sexual tension between them. And in fact, all the time she'd be like, why would I ever be attracted to you? You know, there was this just idea that it was absurd. And you could really see that relationship blossom because there wasn't any sort of sexual tension there at all. So then you got Capaldi, and bringing in an older Doctor seemed like a great idea because you have wisdom and teachable moments and things like that. And when the show finally said goodbye to Jenna Louise Coleman, I was just really excited to see who they would bring in for the new Companion. And with Coleman, you know, she just felt so two-dimensional. She was crazy. She was kind of chasing after this unattainable, incredibly attractive man who was elusive and aloof and had this weird history about him and whatever. And she even would ditch the guy she started dating whenever the Doctor came around. And it just seemed less about her desire to travel through time and space and more about this strange female need to be in the presence of a man of mystery, you know, and her character was just flat. I think that's one of my criticisms with loads of female characters in film and TV.
Oh, yes.
Is that, again, they seem to just exist as a plot device for the male protagonist. And look, I'm not complaining about Jenna Louise Coleman as an actress. She's really good, and I've really enjoyed watching her in Victoria. But just the relationship written for her with the Doctor was really annoying. So, again, when the BBC announced that the new Companion would be a black lesbian named Bill, I kind of inwardly cringed at the idea that they were just kind of checking some boxes off. But I was really excited to see what would happen with kind of no sexual tension at all between the Doctor and the Companion. And Bill did not disappoint. I mean, you had the Doctor as an older character who could operate as a mentor to Bill. And we got to see him in, like, a teaching and advising role, which, as someone going into academia, was like, yeah, this is what we do with our lives, you know, pass on our knowledge.
Yeah.
And so it was really sad to see Capaldi go after such a much better done season where the writing had improved because there wasn't a focus on their relationship so much. But of course, after, you know, 50 some years of having a straight white man in the role, it was really super exciting to hear that we were finally going to get a female protagonist.
Yay.
But gosh, people really did not like it. I mean,
I know.
I actually,
people are dicks.
Would you like to hear some tweets of what people actually,
yes,
legitimately
mean
wrote?
Read the mean,
okay,
tweets.
So wait. Mean
the
tweets.
The first one.
I want you to like mean, yeah, tweets. The She Who Persisted edition.
She Who Persisted mean tweets about Doctor Who. This one I really was hoping was a joke when I first read it and was just being like sarcastic, but apparently this was a genuine response that someone had. Okay. Imagine one of your favorite shows, but with someone of the opposite gender playing your favorite characters. Hell. What?
Listen.
Wait, what?
Listen.
First of all, I thought they were just being sarcastic and,
yeah,
making fun of people who felt that way, but no, apparently not.
Imagine you don't see yourself represented on television at all.
Like, ever.
Hell.
Listen, I mean, 90% of my time on the internet is, I thought you were just being sarcastic, but you're actually serious. So that's kind of my basic experience on the internet. So I absolutely feel you. But actually, this is kind of a very good exercise to take your favorite TV show and imagine it with like opposite gender characters, because then you can actually, you know, see how full of gender stereotyping a lot of roles are. So
it's true. For example, I was just prior to this episode recording watching the latest season of Orange is the New Black. And if I think about Orange is the New Black, but in an all-male prison, there would not be nearly so much sex, I think. At all.
I don't know. Did you ever watch Oz?
Oh, no, I never. No. What is this?
Yeah, that's... Although, you know, I have to say, it's a little more violent than Orange is the New Black, and less... It was bleak. It was real bleak.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quite Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Orange is the New Black is like, yeah, let's have lots of lesbian sex. And I feel, yeah, like a male prison would be like, I'm going to shank you if you whip out your dick right now. Like, I just feel like...
That's my quote of the day today.
That, and it would also be a good title for the series.
Yes. Okay. Then the next tweet I found was, there's really no fucking need. The Doctor is male. Hate how it's fashionable to make male characters female. It's utter shit.
Actually, the Doctor is genderless. He just happens to take on a male form. So
that was a particularly good one. Although, honey, I will say to this person, I too hate that it is fashionable to make male characters female, in part because I think female characters should exist.
Yes.
And I'm sorry that a male character has to turn female for that to happen, but we need more female characters. So
I hate that it's fashionable because
let's make female characters a priority, yeah, and then we wouldn't have that, would we?
I mean, yeah. I would like to say to that person, honey, I hate how it's fashionable to make male characters, period.
Exactly.
Also, can we please make can we please make special editions episode where we just read sexist tweets and make fun of them, please?
Yeah,
yes.
I'm down with that. Minisodes, let's get on that.
Oh yes.
So
okay,
then,
sorry, next tweet. Please go ahead. This is fun.
Are you fucking kidding me? You've ruined Doctor Who for me and my father-in-law. You might as well just canceled the show.
Wow.
Well, I'm sorry that you and your father-in-law no longer enjoy this. Maybe you can find a hunting show to watch or something. I don't know.
Wow.
Raging, ruined an amazing program with a female doctor. Ruined. Ruined, guys. Ruined.
Yeah, ruined. Also, I'm so sorry for his father-in-law, just saying.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's see. Nothing against her at all. But there are some fictional characters you don't mess with, like James Bond, and it's a politically correct world gone a bit mad. To that, I have to say,
mad.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't want to mess with James Bond at all, ever, because he's a womanizer
no.
and a fucking dick. But I think
nah,
we did kind of get to that with Charlize Theron in Atomic Blonde,
yeah.
where everyone was like, oh, God, imagine if James Bond was a woman. Ha-ha, we did.
And what about Salt? Like, Angelina Jolie's Salt. That's
yeah,
also kind of
yeah.
a James Bond, female James Bond, so.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. We've obviously gone completely mad.
There's been a shit ton of like TV shows too, mm-hmm. of like secret agent women. They exist, people, and they're pretty fucking good shows because they're written as like female characters.
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. All right, let's see. What else do we have?
Please, because I love this.
Doctor Who has officially, quote, jumped the shark.
What does that mean?
I hope the new viewers will make up for those of us leaving the program. Classic Who for me. Mm. For those of you who don't know, I had to look this up. The phrase...
Oh, jumping the shark is awesome.
Shark I didn't know that.
To reach a point when far-fetched events are included... merely for the sake of novelty, indicative of a decline in quality, because obviously it's not fucking believable in reality that a woman could become a doctor. So, having a show with aliens is more believable than a man.
I do believe that, but a woman as a main character, I'm sorry. No. I don't believe that.
And then, of course, I will close out some of the more negative tweets with some comments from the Daily Mail. And then I promise to soothe the wounds from that, I will read some funny tweets. So Daily Mail comments, literal things that people have posted in response to this article. Nobody wants a TARDIS full of bras. Actually, that would be great as long as they're really comfy and free. I'm totally happy with that.
Are there tampons in there, too?
Dude, that would be great.
Because free tampons.
I would just shower the world with them for women everywhere.
Whoa.
Chocolate? Chocolate, anyone?
A room of chocolate. Willy Wonka in the TARDIS. Can you imagine that? Mm. I'm sold already.
But not the Johnny Depp version, please. Not Johnny Depp.
No. No. Political correctness should not exist in space.
No.
Just have a think of that one for a minute.
I'm thinking.
Political correctness should not exist in space. You know what? Actually, maybe I believe that's true, if only because then things like racism and sexism and ageism shouldn't exist in space either.
Hello, Star Trek.
Yeah.
Also, it's not like technically everything exists in space, so I'm confused.
this one was good. Doctor Who is a Time Lord, not a Time Lady.
Oh, gee.
Burn. Because obviously having Missy as the master wasn't, you know.
Wasn't we need a drum roll for these. We need drum rolls for this because they're so brilliant.
And this one.
What are you going to say against that?
This one, I think, takes the cake for Daily Mail comments. I feel the exact same way I do now as when Thatcher was elected as Prime Minister. Political correctness has gone too far.
Suck it, dude.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe that a woman becoming Doctor Who can relate at all to Margaret Thatcher becoming Prime Minister. But sure, if that's the biggest problem you have in your life, wow.
I'm happy for you.
Good on you, mate. Seriously.
Yeah. Ugh.
But then, of course, it being the internet, not only did you have all these whining, complaining people, but you did have people who went, "You're a fucking knob." And responded. So these are some of the ones that I think are the best. So you have, if you think the doctor changing gender is unrealistic, I have some bad news about aliens, time travel, and regeneration. That's a good one. Breaking news. Misogynists around the world abandoned fictional show because they hired a woman to play the lead alien. Fair point. Not sure what is more entertaining, the joy of Jodie Whittaker being cast as the Doctor, or grown men throwing tantrums over it. And I think maybe one of my favorites was, oh great, a female Doctor Who, what next? Female real doctors? Female pilots? Female scientists? Female sisters and mothers? Female women?
Oh my God.
Fair point. Don't Imagine. Want too much of that happening, right?
Yeah.
And actually, there was an interview that I'd seen with the founder of the Everyday Sexism Project, and she said, the fact that this is even an issue in 2017 is fairly ridiculous, but more shocking are the number of people who seem genuinely angry at the fact that after 12 white men have played the Doctor, one woman is finally going to get a turn. And she said, it shows that even today, progress towards equality is still met with resistance, anger, and vitriol, which is incredibly accurate. But I think perhaps the best clapback from anyone on this entire issue was from the very snarky Merriam-Webster dictionary account, which said,
"Wait,
yeah,
we need an actual drum roll here."
Doctor has no gender in English. Where's the lie, honestly?
Yeah, I mean, fair point.
So, you know, I think it's really interesting that there was so much backlash about 50-some years a man has been playing it, but one woman gets one season and suddenly it's a huge issue. And then, of course, it's been rumored or revealed or something that Bradley Walsh, who's a relatively well-known TV presence here, would be stepping in as companion. And that kind of pissed me off in a way, because Radio Times ran a poll and about two-thirds of the people who responded said that they thought Jodie Whittaker's doctor needed an older companion. Like, it just makes me feel like, of course, she doesn't know how the world works. Despite being a thousand-something-year-old Time Lord, no, of course, she doesn't know anything. And, you know, it makes me feel like she's just going to be undermined by this know-it-all man who's going to mansplain everything to her. I mean,
oh God. Look,
I'll wait and see.
Maybe it's going to be great.
I don't want to say, like, oh God, it's already awful. Why would I watch it? Because, no, I'm excited about having a female doctor. You know, if she gets an older companion, I think that we should all just go rescue Wilf and take him around the universe because he was fucking awesome. But, like, let's have someone who deserves it. So I'm hesitant, but looking forward to the Christmas special and the subsequent episodes to see what happens with Jodie Whittaker and whoever her companion ends up being. But I think, you know, her interview with the BBC for her introduction as Doctor Who gave me some hope for having a more multidimensional character. They asked her what she wanted to tell her fans, and she said, "I want to tell the fans not to be scared by my gender, because this is a really exciting time, and Doctor Who represents everything that's exciting about change. The fans have lived through so many changes, and this is only a new, different one, not a fearful one." Which, I'm sorry that she had to say it all.
Yeah, completely.
Because to have to sit down and defend your gender as something exciting,
it's just,
or rather, not fearful, is really sad. You
honestly,
know, but I'm also really excited that she's remained positive, and I really can't wait to see what she brings to the table, especially because she reminded everyone that the Doctor is a collection of every regeneration that came before them. Mm. And so we'll get to see all those facets of the Doctor and all of those nuances that each one brought to the table, but with a new face and a new gender, and that's okay, and that's amazing. I mean, to be able to see a woman in a predominantly male role for once in my life is incredible. And
completely.
It makes me feel like, okay, maybe I can be something more. I mean, I know that sounds really silly, but Doctor Who has always kind of been something that's really important to me because there is this kind of sense of compassion across races and genders and things like that, and I want to see that, but with a woman in power, you know.
So
I'm excited. I'm excited to see where it goes. Like I said, I'm hesitant, I'm cautious, but I'm excited.
But at the same time, it's also really sad when you think about, like,
it is
her statement that she tells people not to be afraid of a gender, and also all of the backlash she got. I mean, it's kind of funny because people are so fucking stupid, but then it's also very sad. You know, that it's still such an issue.
And I think, you know, what's also really tragic is that it points to a larger issue that women in any form of media aren't accepted yet.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Center for the Study of Women in TV and Film, and they published a report a couple years ago that examined the roles of women in TV and film. And it was really horrifying. I mean, I was reading the 2014 report, and they found that women made up 20% of people working in key behind-the-scenes roles on the top 700 theatrically released films. And that was only slightly higher than the 17% working on the top 250 films. So this is talking about women who are directors, writers, you know, anything in producers, that sort of thing. Only 20% in the top 700 films. Mm-hmm. And then they found that women had accounted for only 13% of directors in the top 700 films, which was almost twice the percentage working on the top 250 films. And then you get into the disparity of, like, who the fuck is even writing the scripts. And they found that on films with female directors, women comprised 52% of writers, which is awesome. Like, I would very happily see a 50-50 split. But to contrast that, on films that had exclusively male directors, women accounted for just 8% of the writers. And, you know, no wonder female characters fall so flat. Like, yeah. It doesn't always have to boil down to poor casting choices, although obviously that can be an issue. But there's this huge discrepancy in how many female specialists are being employed to work on projects in TV and films. And I think, you know, that goes back to the Wonder Woman film, because it's like, oh my God, exclusively female directors. This is great. I'm so excited. Yeah. But like, that shouldn't, in 2017, that shouldn't be such a big deal, you know?
But it is, absolutely. But it is. And I think we should do an episode where we talk about like the importance of representation in general, and about the responsibility that filmmakers have and also don't not have probably, and what pop culture can do and should not do and should do. So I think it's like a much bigger issue than we can talk about here today.
So I think I just want to conclude by saying that I want to acknowledge that we've made leaps and bounds. I mean, I can only imagine what it would have looked like in the year 2000 for how many women were in film and media and stuff like that. And we're getting there in finding strong female protagonists, but I still think there's such a long way to go in regards to having women, yes, but also in that intersectionality of having people of color and having representations with different ability levels and diseases and all of these other things. I want to see a normal character that has depression that isn't labeled as hopeless, you know?
Who does nothing but lie around and sleep all day like the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly.
That will be an exciting film. I want to see that.
And you know, my feeling on it is if you're going to have a female lead, fucking just do it well. I mean, I'm tired of seeing all of these two-dimensional female characters being passed off as wonders of the universe because, oh my God, we have a female lead.
Oh God.
We're so important. Look at us. Like, look, hire female writers. Work with female directors. I don't need to see a strong female protagonist in every fucking film. But when the global sex ratio is 101 men to 100 women, I really do expect to see something, you know, like a better and a stronger representation in the shows that I choose to watch. And I'm just tired of seeing shows that have a token female character with less than adequate development. Like, if you're not going to write, if you're not going to write her well, don't write her at all. I don't want that to become the norm. And while production companies and film franchises try to decide whether or not they want to take, you know, such a risky decision in having a strong female character, you know, it makes me think of Waiting for Godot. Like, I'll keep standing here by this fucking dead tree, coming back day after day and waiting for something that seems pretty impossible.
But then it's not completely impossible because Godot is not coming, but Godot. I can never pronounce it. Godot came. And just an announcement at the end of this episode. In 2019, she's going to come back because there will be Wonder Woman 2.
Well, and before that, we have her the Justice League movie with Jason Momoa, and I don't remember who's playing the Flash, but I don't care because Jason Momoa was so hot that I'm so excited to see him in that movie.
And that's going to come out quite soon, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you know what? While we're waiting, we have some things to look forward to, and I'm really hoping to get those strong, well-written female characters on my screen so that I can actually feel like maybe as a woman I can do something useful in society, you know?
So thank you for listening. Thank you very much. You can find us on iTunes, where you can also
subscribe to us, which you should do, because that way you don't miss all of our wonderful episodes that are going to come out much more regularly now again. Please also review us on iTunes, because that really helps other people find us, and everyone needs more nasty in their lives. I think we can all agree on that. Also, you can listen to us basically everywhere you can listen to podcasts. So from Stitcher to Google Play to, I don't know what there is, like everywhere. You can listen to us everywhere. You can also listen to us at our homepage, shewhopersisted.com. Then we also have a Gmail account, so that's shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write us emails. You can also pop us a line on Facebook. Yes, we also have a Facebook page. We also have a Facebook group for discussions. What else do we have? A Twitter at shewhopersistedpod. And we have an Instagram also, where I posted my lovely Wonder Woman cup. So if you want to see that, you have to go
look at it. It's so cute.
It's so cute. Beatrice with her cute Wonder Woman cup. Yeah, that's what you can look at. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for listening, and stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.